Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, January 29th, 2016. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo.
So.
Yep.
Another week has gone by. Anything exciting in your world? I know we're doing this a little later than it's 4:30 UTC. Are you going to fall asleep on us this time?
I'll try not to. I had a very long day. I will admit, I did start very, very early. My day dragged on. It's just things, you know. I was supposed to have a meeting in the afternoon, and it wound up turning into a meeting at 8 o'clock at night, 8:30. Then I went to a board meeting for something else, turned into a shouting match. I was at about 3 shouting matches all day. I mean, I'm really, you know. I took Tua leave in the afternoon, then I took some Zantac later. I'm like, yeah,
I get what you're coming from. The one thing I'll mention before we get into the meat of this, and by the way, the meat of this today will be, of course, we're less than a week from Iowa, so we're going to talk presidential election, we're going to talk Iowa, we're going to talk Democrats and Republicans and all that kind of stuff, and then we'll have a lightning round with anything else. But before we get into that, the one thing I want to mention is this is the season. I don't talk about my work here. Because that's just prudent on a podcast like this. But I will mention it is currently part of the annual review cycle.
Ah.
Okay. Now this takes a little while. Where everybody doesn't actually get their reviews until later in the spring sometime. But everybody at this point is being asked to do all of the evaluations of their peers, of their boss, their self-review, all of this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all I just want to mention, without getting into detail about any of this, is I hate this shit. I hate it with passion.
They're just, and some companies make it simpler, and some companies make it more complicated. It's a complicated process. They're a pain in the ass. I hate self-assessing myself. I don't know. I just hate the whole overall thing.
The whole thing is like, as you said, different companies do it differently. But, at where I am, the expectation is that you write reviews on like 5 or 6 peers. You write a review on yourself. You write a review on your boss. And it's like each one of these is something that, takes a non-trivial amount of time to do. I mean, of course you can sort of blow it off and like write a sentence and something, but like, you're supposed to put some thought into it, and you're supposed to do it like, there's certain things you're supposed to like sort of compare people against and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, really, it takes so much time and effort out of other things. And for me, like, I don't know, like maybe some key people can just like zoom, 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 get them done, blah, blah, blah. For me,
you're usually a fast writer. I mean, whenever I've seen you like pull together something in writing, I mean, you usually do it in like one, you write it down once and usually it comes out looking perfect. Like
I can use an editor in a bunch of places. Like
But your first drafts are better than most people's second or third.
Thank you very much, Yvonne. But no, like with these things, if I'm writing like one of my posts about the election or whatever, and I have some statistics and I'm writing down like the results of those and stuff like that. Okay. Yeah. I know exactly what I want to get out in my head and I sort of just go through it and boom, it's there. And in a lot of places where I'm writing on a topic where I have, strong, and not even strong feelings, but I basically have an idea what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty easy, like you said. But like, if I'm being asked to reflect on the last year of performance from somebody that I interact with a few times a week, but like, I'm supposed to be doing something that includes the last year, and I'm supposed to put it in a way that's sort of, fair and constructive and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I spend a lot of time on that. Just sort of, I'll write down a sentence and then I'll pace. and I'll go around the room and I'm like, what do I want to say? I don't know. And so it ends up taking me way longer than it probably should.
When it comes to talking about a subject, you're pretty good about getting down to the nitty gritty. When it comes to talk about other people, it's like you hesitate.
Well, I hesitate some just because it's about other people. I also hesitate because I'm being asked to remember things from like I can tell you like my overall impression of like, you know, pick a random person. I can tell you a couple sentences of like, you know, do I think they're good? Do I think they're bad? Do I whatever? But if you ask me to start backing that up with evidence and giving examples and specific things like, oh, by the way, this person does really well. And here's an example. Back last June, they did this. I don't remember last June.
Yeah, you're not the type to remember that kind of stuff.
You know, I don't remember last June, and I don't necessarily remember the specifics. I remember the general impression, but, you know, and that's where, like, sometimes with these, you know, I try to get away with, let's just do the general impression. You know, I'll write a paragraph or two at very high level, what I think about the person, whatever. But I know what they really want is a little bit more than that. And if I can remember specific examples, I'll give it. And I'll tell you, I have tried to, you know, over the last couple of years, I've tried to loosen up a little bit and, you know, not worry about it as much. And more of the time, just write down my initial thoughts and then this basically say, screw it, that's good enough. But, you know, sometimes that's okay, sometimes that's not. And anyway, but my point is just, like, there's got to be a better way. I mean, because this is just, like, you know, it's so...
Well, a lot of people, you know, say that they should be... I mean, I try to do them as... I am for, like, doing them as simple as possible. And, you know, when I go and, like, when I used to do that, I would ask for feedback from other people. I would just make it relatively simple, not a form, not something. I would go and just say, look, could you just, like, hey, would send that, you know, a couple of people. Do you have some highlights or things that you want to mention, like, about somebody's review? So I'd gather some stuff informally and not make it, you know,
well, see, like,
make it so formal.
Where I am, it's all... there's like a tool you have to enter your feedback in, and it's tracked, and there's stats, and there's this and that. Yeah, so
that's too much. That's too much. That's my perspective, but, you know.
So anyway.
Anyway, yep, it's very tiring.
Alex is here telling me it's dinner, but I'm in the middle of my podcast.
Dinner.
I know. I'll have dinner after the podcast.
Dinner's getting made.
Okay, you have fun with dinner. Close the door on your way out. But yeah, anyway, yeah, obviously, it is very different process level in different places. When I was at Merrill Lynch ages ago, I don't remember it being as big a process as it is where I am now. But, you know, I don't know. Every year it frustrates me. Like, the most frustrating part of the annual cycle is the part of the year where I have to be worried about this kind of stuff and dealing with this kind of stuff. And it's not really... You know, the part at the end where, like, you get your review, although that's not always fun either, but, like, it's more this part leading up to that, the writing the reviews of everybody. It's just like, I don't know. I don't like it.
Okay. Well, all right. So reviews suck. Okay.
Reviews suck. Just, you know.
Get rid of them. Yes.
Or just, you know, give me.
Simplify them.
Let me push a 1 to 10 scale on everybody, and that's it.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't need to write anything. Just, you know, you're a six. You know, you're an eight.
I'm a six. You give me a six.
Hi, Alex. Bye, Alex.
Apparently, I'm a six.
You're a six. Well, I said you're a six. You're an eight. I was being generic, people. Like,
if
you know, okay. I don't know. Maybe you want me to actually review you?
No.
Let's see. I'll give you, maybe I'll go up to a seven.
A seven?
A seven, you know.
I probably don't deserve better than a seven.
Because, you know, I gave you a certain list of assignments for marketing tasks not completed.
I mean, if I go with that, then I should get like a 3 to 2.
Well, at least you usually show up for the show.
Yes, there you go. That's always a plus.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll start talking the election.
Even with a little sleep after 18 hours of, you know, going around, yes, I'll show up. There you go.
You may fall asleep during the show.
Fall asleep, but I'll make it. I'll give it up. Never.
There you go. Okay, we're taking a break. We'll be back. You want to do Republicans first or Democrats?
Oh, let's go with the Repubs.
Republicans first. Okay, back after this.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at imbou, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
And we're back. So it you know, it's Friday UTC already as we're doing this, Thursday night, really, you know, US time. The Iowa caucuses are Monday. So we're so close. By the time we do our next show, we will actually have real voting to look at, not just polls.
Really? By next... Well, already by next show? Wow.
Yes, by the next time we do a show, Iowa will be done and over, and we'll be talking about coming up on New Hampshire.
Okay. Wow.
So...
I mean, yeah. Okay. Finally.
So let's... before we start talking polls and delegates and stuff like that, which of course we will, stuff that's been going on with the Republicans in the last week... we had the, we've had this sort of Republican circular firing squad, as they say.
Yep.
Because what's been happening is as we've gotten closer and closer, everybody's gotten more vicious.
Yes.
And there are two aspects of this. One, a number of outlets started actually attacking Trump for the first time seriously.
Yep.
And we mentioned right as we were recording last week's show, National Review came out with an anti-Trump issue. But there also, for the very, very first time, apparently there were anti-Trump radio ads being run in Iowa. And it's like, you know, I guess that's a strategy. Wait for the last week. But it's a kind of dangerous strategy.
Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't have started with that before.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I saw and retweeted a little while ago, there was a PPP poll in Iowa very recently. They've only released the primary stuff so far, but there have been lots of primary polls. Anyway, it had like 30-some percent of Iowa caucus goers on the Republican side saying that there was a significant chance they still could change their mind before Monday.
Wow. Damn, 33%. Jesus.
About 31, a little, somewhere around there. I'm doing it off the top of my head, but
damn,
about 30%. So close to a third of people, you know, less than a week out, saying, "Yeah, I could still change my mind. I could still go a different direction." And so that's potentially a lot of flexibility there. And this is why people say the polls in Iowa are notoriously bad. I also tweeted the example that somebody posted the difference between the final polls in Iowa and the actual results in 2008 and 2012, specifically for the winners. And I guess I retweeted William Jordan on this yesterday. But anyway, in 2008, Huckabee was the winner, and he polled 4.7% better than, I mean, his actual vote totals were 4.7% vote better than his final.
Than his actual final
than
poll.
His final polls.
Wow, 5 points.
And Santorum in 2012 did 8.3% better than his final polls.
Jesus. Wow.
So, and there was, if you were, I don't know if you remember those years, but in both cases, there was some debate about, like, you know, was there a problem with the polls? Was there this? Was it that?
Yep.
And there may have been, you know, something, some of that. But for the most part,
you think people just changed their mind late?
Yeah, people just changed their mind late, or made up their minds in the first place late.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, you know, if you apply that to Iowa polls today, I mean, Trump is now ahead in Iowa by 6.8%. But
so one guy, I mean, it's already happened before where one guy in the last poll before then has swung enough that they would basically bump Trump.
It's happened before. Like you know, and it came close to that level in 2008, and it was more than that level in 2012. So, you know, yeah, Trump's ahead by 6.8% in the Real Clear Politics average, and let's see, more than that in the pollster average. Trying to do the math in my head right. About 8% in the pollster average. But, you know, even with those margins, it's not necessarily a slam dunk. Things can happen in the last 4 days.
Yep.
Yeah, and the polls can be wrong by a few percent, too, even the poll averages.
For all you know.
You may win.
Yep.
Now, however, it would really be shocking, though, if, like, you know, suddenly Bush came out of nowhere and won or something.
Yes.
But, you know.
I'm going to say that if that happened, you and I would be shocked. We would be, I mean, we'd be like. Yeah, shocked is not strong enough.
Although apparently
we'd be stunned.
Apparently he's done better in the last few polls in New Hampshire.
But, oh no, I get that. But still,
but
anyway,
I'm talking about Iowa.
I'm talking about Iowa right now. If that happened, we'd be stunned.
Yes. Yes, we would. So, you know, so I was mentioning the circular firing, Scott. I said, first of all, people have actually been attacking Trump. And the polling may not be fast enough to catch up with that before the end to see if it's effective or not. Maybe we'll get a little bit of a hint, because I would be shocked if we don't get several more polls over the weekend out there. But also what's been happening is that everybody but Trump has been attacking each other.
Right.
Viciously.
Yep.
So you've got Cruz versus Rubio. You've got Bush attacking Rubio. Bush attacking Cruz. Christie's in there. All of these guys, other than Trump, are just viciously attacking each other, because everybody's sort of thinking of this as they want to knock it. It's the battle for who fights.
It's the elimination round, basically.
Yeah,
right.
It's the battle for who fights Trump rather than fighting Trump. But what's resulting from that is that everybody's getting weaker except for Trump as they shoot each other down. And so Trump benefits from this, because they're all playing, you know, nobody has yet moved to the part of the game where they're like, you know, we have to go after number one here. They're all like fighting over number two.
Well, then of course you told me that this week they started like pumping up the volume on the anti-Trump stuff.
That's true, but it's not, for the most part, the candidates themselves.
So PACs stuff.
It's PACs. It's people like National Review. It's all this kind of stuff. So it's not, you know, Rubio.
It's not
going
who we
after
were
Trump.
Expecting, right? You know, to do it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, you kind of, it actually kind of, to be honest, it is, because we expected the establishment to go after Trump, and it's not really. You know, Rubio, Carson, Bush, etc. You know, it's these sort of institutional things, and so it does make sense that the PACs are doing that. But it's interesting that the candidates themselves, for the most part, aren't. Now they'll throw an occasional thing Trump's way, but their focus has clearly been each other. And yeah, we always talked, like, you know, in the past, it's been, you know, the establishment guy ends up winning in the end because all of the people representing various splinters of the Republican Party end up dividing themselves up and none of them wins. And so the establishment guy walks through in the end. That's what happened with McCain. That's what happened with Romney. You could argue that happened with Bush before that. We're seeing the exact opposite of that here, where we've got, you know, Trump is the one everybody's sort of leaving alone, and all these other guys are dividing up all the rest and shooting each other. And so we'll see. I mean, of course, you know, everybody does expect, as we always, as we've talked about many times before, after we get through Iowa, lot of these people will drop, and maybe we do get to the point where it's a clear one-on-one race. And if you had to put bets on that right now, it's Trump versus Cruz, which makes a bunch of people crazy. Rubio's still in the mix, I guess. Look, you know, so
what I will say about this race and, you know, the effect on the American population in general, I was like texting Sam this week that I had a conversation with somebody, a friend of mine who lives in Texas, who's, you know, he's a centrist like myself. Okay, all right, Sam, well, you know, and he was like troubled by the arguments and the yelling he'd been getting with some people, and like some of them that specifically were telling him that they thought, for example, that Cruz was not enough right wing for them.
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking Cruz. He was not enough right wing for them. Okay. I'm like a little bit like shocked.
You expect that kind of talk about Bush or Rubio or Kasich or somebody,
but not a guy like Cruz.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I've heard this from a lot of different people, that are experiencing a lot of the same stuff. And I'm like going, what the fuck is going on?
Well, the thing is too, I mean, there's also been a lot of stuff pointed out. I mean, the National Review article being part of it, I mean, is the Trumpites, you know, we're not really talking conservatism there either.
Correct. Yep. They're not conservatives. Nope.
I mean, if you look at the Trump supporters and you look at sort of the traditional definitions of conservatism.
Oh yeah. They definitely do not meet them at all.
I mean, you know, maybe some of them here or there. And again, there's that sort of a thing we talked about a little bit before, because there's one thing that's like sort of the philosophical idea of conservatism. And you've got intellectual thinkers who talk about, slow change and small government and this and that. And you have a litany of like specific, you know, philosophical positions that conservatives have. But then you also have the other kind of conservatism, which isn't any of that, and it's just a cultural identity.
Yep.
There's no necessarily direct tie to specific immutable philosophical or political views. It's just, and I think you put it well last week, it's just what unites you is you're against the damn liberals.
Right. And whatever the hell they're for, we're against. That's it. Simple.
Right. And so you get somebody like Trump, who has espoused lots of liberal views in the past, along with some conservative views, along with some who the fuck knows what that is views. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he's sort of, you know, sticking his finger in the eye of everybody currently in charge of anything, gets people excited.
I guess. I don't know what, I mean, that seems to be like a logical explanation. I mean, I can't come up with any other.
So, which brings us to, Trump skipping the debate.
Right.
So right before we recorded this show was yet another Republican debate.
Yep.
But Donald Trump decided to skip it.
And from the excerpts that I saw is that a lot of people are saying, "Wow, no Trump." They actually talked about issues.
Yes, There has definitely been that. Trump ostensibly skipped it because they wouldn't dump Megyn Kelly as one of the moderators.
I think that's a load of bullshit.
Yes, when he talked about it later, it sort of shifted from Megyn Kelly to Fox in general. He made a statement about himself not being treated fairly, by the way, which is, you know, hey, that's exactly the phrase he used about whether or not he'd end up doing third party if he didn't win. Right. So he's laying the groundwork for that just in case. Basically, a lot of folks are thinking, and I would tend to agree with this, that, you know, he would have skipped it regardless. He would have made some excuse. The bottom line is he feels like, you know, there's no downside to skipping it, but there's potential downside from being in it.
Mm.
And he made a strategic decision that, you know, being in the lead how he is, with, you know, like we were talking about, almost a 7-point lead in Iowa, it looks like, 7 or 8-point lead in Iowa.
But you see, that is and not even a big enough national lead to be acting like that.
Well, right, but I think what he's saying is, here's the thing. He goes into the debate, and I think this was partially borne out. The Fox people were very aggressive tonight. They asked a lot of relatively hard questions. They to a bunch of different candidates, brought up statements they made many years ago that differ from their positions now and asked them to justify it.
Of course, I heard Cruz threatening to walk out.
Cruz did threaten to walk out, which was, I wish he would have, but
that would have been hilarious.
It would have been. It would have been so funny. But I don't think it would have worked out as well for him as it works for Trump. And of course, we have yet to see how it'll really turn for Trump. My gut feeling is that this helps Trump because in the end, first of all, for the people who already like him, this is just him standing up for himself. This is just him proving that he can put the media where they belong. And it's Fox, but still it's the media. And what he's showing is he was in control of this situation. He had Fox begging him to come. There are all kinds of Fox anchors. The president of Fox, Roger Ailes, everybody was trying to call him and beg him and say, please reconsider. And he showed him, they were coming and supplicating to him, saying, please, 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 please come. And he was like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. And it just showed, like, who's really in charge there.
Well, I mean, I think that, look, I mean, I don't know if it's a whole thing about him being in charge or not, because, look, you're running a debate. Obviously, he is the leading candidate. I mean, of course you want him to be there.
Well, right. But the point is that this is once again something where he doesn't – as much as some people are trying to put a spin of it, is he's scared of the questions, blah, 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 he's not coming. I think
– No, I don't think it was that.
No. People were trying to spin it like that. Cruz was trying to spin it like that. A number of people were saying, ha ha, he's afraid of Megyn Kelly. But like, I think the spin that actually gets out there, especially amongst anybody who is potentially sympathetic to Trump in the first place, is not that at all. It's that it's more he's putting them in their place and he's showing his independence and he's showing he's in control and he's not going to put up with that shit because Fox was being unfair to him. And so he's going to do his own thing. And like I said, you know, actually, when you got to the debate, it was a fairly hard debate compared to some of the others. And, you know, now I think if he'd been there, Trump would have handled that just fine and probably completely changed the tone of the debate if he'd been there. But, you know, I don't see a downside for him here. I don't see like a lot of people, or at least people that would have considered voting for him anyway, saying, you know, I think less of Trump because he skipped it. In fact, but there are going to be a number of people who think more of him because he skipped it.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that, I mean, if I go by traditional metrics of what really impacts people, I think not being there is detrimental. I don't see.
See, here's the thing.
I think he's calculating.
The reason not being there is detrimental is because people don't see your face on the TV, and people are like, "Oh, he's gone. He must not be running anymore." But the fact that he wasn't coming to this debate completely dominated coverage of this for days beforehand, and during the debate itself, everybody was talking about the fact he wasn't there. And he had this, his own little counter thing, although I was disappointed, by the way, on his counter thing. I expected him to, like, you know, do some direct snarking of the debate and some stuff like that, and apparently there was very little of that going on. So I was a little disappointed there. But the bottom line is, you know, he may not have been there, but everybody was still talking about him. I don't think he loses at all. It's not like when Rand Paul was left out of the last debate and nobody missed him. It's different from that.
I get it, but I guess one of the things that I always believe is that you always want to control the narrative. And if you're not there, you're not controlling the narrative.
See, I think he may not have controlled what was said at the debate itself, but the narrative of the last few days has been 100% in Trump's control. He defined what everybody was talking about for the last few days.
I'm still struggling.
I mean, we're talking more.
I know that it controlled what it talked about. I'm still not sure. This is what I said. I don't know until whether it's really with the Iowa voters, whether this was really a positive or a negative. I mean, you know, look, you could, depending, you know, you said 30% of the voters are considering, you know, changing their mind, right?
Yeah.
Look, they could, you know, you could take this, like, maybe they'll take it, like, I don't know, it's just insulting. You could, you know?
Donald Trump, in a speech a little while ago, directly called Iowa voters stupid.
Yeah, a little bit, well, do you mean a little bit ago, he did it again?
No, I'm talking, it was like a month ago or something, but
yeah,
the point was, what happened was the polls started to go down, he called Iowa voters stupid, and then they went up again. Like, insulting Iowa voters.
Well, then I would have figured that maybe today he would have taken the opportunity to go shoot somebody like he mentioned he could.
Oh yeah, we didn't even mention that. He, on a little speech, he directly said, I could go out on the middle of Fifth Avenue and start shooting people and I wouldn't lose a single voter. And of course, somebody actually polled that.
And I think the response was, like, it depends on who he shot, right?
Well, no, there were a couple things. The actual poll, would somebody had asked that, and yes, one of the responses to somebody just tweeted that question, come on, Trump supporters, let me know, what would you do? Would it change your mind? And one of the responses was, you got to tell me who he shoots. Because, of course, that's going to make a difference. But no, in terms of the actual poll, if I can... Okay, no, I don't have it in front of me. It was about 40% said they would still support him. And, oh, here it is. If Trump started shooting people in the street, 40% would still back him, 30% are not sure. And only another 30% said that they would vote for somebody else.
God. I mean, who are these whack jobs when 70% of them? Basically, the guy could just come out with a gun and just randomly start shooting people and still vote for this bastard. Who the fuck are these people? God.
Well, to answer that question, since we're talking Republicans, I think you had noted that we should talk a little bit about the comments I get on my election graphs site.
Yes, we should, as a matter of fact.
So... And this goes in the Republican section because the vast majority of people commenting on my site appear to be Trump supporters.
Yes.
So the last, just to give you an idea, and we've mentioned this a couple other times in the show, but the last post I did got a particularly strong response. The last electoral college poll I did.
Yep.
And basically...
On on his page on Facebook.
Yeah, so if you on Facebook look for election graphs, if you haven't liked it, like it. And it's all I just post the links to the commentary from when I update the actual data on electiongraphs.com. And when we get to Democrats, I'll talk a little bit more about that because I launched the delegate tracker and stuff like that, which is more relevant for the Democrats this week. But the particular post here was, did Clinton already bottom against the Republican field? And that was my my post was titled that because there had been several updates that showed Clinton strengthening against a variety of Republican candidates, against Bush, against Rubio, against Trump.
And so I began the commentary. Okay.
Yeah, Yvonne was first. He says Trump, just because you needed to do that.
Yes.
And you followed that up by Jeb, but everybody ignored that.
Ignored my Jeb.
Four people liked your Trump comment.
Yes, four people liked my Trump. Nobody liked my Jeb comment.
But then we're gonna then we go forward. I had 30 comments on.
And
this
then the
post.
Next one again saying Trump.
Yes, no exclamation point. You had exclamation points.
Yes, I did put exclamation points.
But then we had, the liar is going to lose, Trump is going to win. Then somebody posted a bunch of GIFs. We had, tell him Trump's coming and he's bringing America with him. We had...
prepare to take America back.
Yeah, we had the proper reaction when somebody says, I'm voting for Hillary because of her accomplishments, with a guy laughing.
Yep.
We have, yes, I have the blood of Americans on my hands, but what difference does it make? You people are so stupid, you will vote for me anyway.
With
a picture
of
Hillary Clinton.
Like two hands full of blood.
Yep. Also, a Hillary Clinton picture. So all of these aren't directly Trump. Some of them are anti-Clinton, but it's probably Trump people. Yep. My campaign is funded by Muslim countries that behead gays and rape women. Also a picture of Hillary Clinton. Let's see, we have Hillary Clinton 1975, Hillary is fired from Watergate Investigation Committee for lying and unethical behavior. 2015, Hillary faces Benghazi Investigative Committee for lying about deaths of four Americans 40 years later, and she's still a liar. Then we have a quote from colored people are like human weeds and need to be exterminated by Margaret Sanger. And then Hillary Clinton saying, I admire Margaret Sanger enormously, her courage, her tenacity, her vision. I don't want to read all of these. There are a bunch of these. And then
they keep going on like this.
Then we got some capital letter folks again.
Trump is the one the people want, and he will win. Well, I did. What about, you know, we had a whole bunch of. I like these one, like, for example, these polls must be tainted. It's a conspiracy against Trump. The elite don't want him elected. Another phony poll, P-O-L-E, yeah. Apparently. So you're doing, you know, apparently you're putting Polish people on here. The Dems and Repubs are all working to get Cruz the nomination, knowing he will never beat Clinton. They want another's straw show election, just like the last two, with the Dems winning again. Then goes caps. Is it going this time? Trump will see to that.
Yes.
Anyway, yeah. This is just and on and on and on and on like this.
Yeah, and so what's interesting about this, and in you know last time we mentioned this, like first of all, like on my election graphs site, I on one hand I'm gratified that people are looking at it, although most of these people, by the way, don't click through to the actual article or graphs or anything. They just look at the headline and my one paragraph summary on Facebook, and they don't go any further than that. But I'm gratified that people are responding, but what this results in is several times a day, I get a little ping on my phone that there's a new comment. And for a second, I'm like, maybe somebody is actually like giving some constructive feedback. They've read my article and they want to make a point about what I've said and we can have a discussion. And then I go there and it's Trump. or it's about evil Hillary or whatever,
right?
In the last discussion, I was actually heartened that there was a point where you know the Trump people started actually getting into it seemed like a conversation, like somebody was, and my, in addition to you, my wife got into the mix and started like trying to.
Get into like constructive arguments with them. I'm like, just saying.
She was just trying to stir them up, but whatever. anyway, but there was actually like somebody came in and said, I want Sanders to win or something.
Right.
And then so people started going on. There was actually a back and forth between a couple of these people. And I'm like, oh, well, at least they're having a discussion. I mean, they're yelling at each other. And of course, the person who said they wanted Sanders to win later criticized a positive comment about Sanders. And in so I was wondering when I saw that Sanders comment, like, is this actually a Sanders supporter? And no, I don't think it was. I think it was a Trump person saying they wanted Sanders to win so they could beat Sanders. But I don't know. But the interesting thing about this, and I've seen this in other places too, and we've said this doesn't necessarily correlate to votes, but the Trump supporters are so active and so dedicated and so like intense. You know, like I haven't, you know, like I said, I'm posting these updates. I don't see the Cruz.
There are. I mean, what I'm saying is,
I don't see the Cruz people commenting on here. I don't see the. I don't see the Sanders people. I don't see the Hillary people. It's certainly don't see Jeb people. I mean, of course, there are a lot less of them. But
I tried to get those guys out. Nobody came out.
But yeah, but these Trump folks, they're everywhere.
And, oh gosh, but you know, look, I kind of like remember, look, but almost every time that I've seen, you know, this is a very noisy minority that, you know,
well, it's a noisy minority, but you know, he's got a good shot of winning Iowa, and he's
probably gonna walk away with
New Hampshire, you know, so you know, this is not an insignificant number of people here.
No. But I even like, look, but what I'm saying is that the guys that are doing the yelling are a noisy minority, even within those guys.
That's quite possibly true.
True. So I just think he does love to attract the angry idiot. I mean, he really's got a corner on that market.
yeah. And he could probably, you know, go on TV and say, I'm going to win because idiots will vote for me. And they'll be like, yes.
Yeah!
Oh, but, you know, no, it's interesting to watch. And I'm not necessarily saying all Trump supporters are idiots. I'm not going there.
I will go to the extent to say that as far as I can tell, all Trump supporters are idiots.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but yes.
Wait, how's your dad think about this?
My dad's an idiot.
There you go. I get the sense he might like Trump.
You know, my dad's an idiot. I mean, I told him that myself. So there you go.
Okay. So is your dad really a Trump supporter?
I don't know, but I wouldn't surprise me. He's kind of done moronic things like this lately in his old age.
Okay.
You know?
Anyway. So, just really quick, getting back to Iowa to wrap this up before we switch over to Democrats. The way it's to get it out here, on the Republican side, there are 27 delegates at stake and in the Iowa caucus. The way it works are the delegates will be proportionally allocated to the contenders based on the statewide vote. Each candidate receives the statewide vote times 27 divided by the statewide vote, and you round the fractions to the nearest whole number. And if there are too few delegates, somebody gets an extra delegate. If they're too few, someone loses a delegate. But basically what that means is on the Republican side anyway, it's basically a straight proportional thing. There's no minimum threshold other than, I guess, 1/27th. If you get less than 1/27th of the vote, you ain't getting shit.
Right.
Which is what? What's 1/27th? 3.7%.
Okay, there you go.
So if you get less than 3.7%, you sort of get nothing. Or
one of mommy's houses in Chief World 1.
Oh.
On fire.
Oh no, you better go help her.
It was her fault because she was had been stealing on her.
Okay. Thank you for telling me. One of Mommy's houses in one of her Minecraft worlds called Sheep World 2 is on fire. Alex wanted to make sure I knew that.
Well, call the fire department.
Exactly. So anyway, I guess you could actually get a little bit less than that percentage and still round up to one delegate. But anyway, it's basically straight proportional on the Republican side other than that. So, you know, if you have the current, you know, matchup, what does that mean? They're about Trump's at about 33%. So out of that 27, he gets like 9. Is that right? About? So,
yep.
And if Cruz is right behind him, he's going to get like, you know, 7 or 8. And then you get a smattering of other delegates, but you know, and even if it flips, Cruz and Trump are close enough together that, unless something surprising happens, neither one of them will get an outright majority and they'll be relatively close to each other. Mm. You know, probably a couple delegates apart or something like that. So I will predict that we do have Trump coming out of it with the most delegates, with Cruz right behind him. I think that we're not going to see, and yeah, we'll know in a week if I'm right. I don't think we'll see a major move in the polls in the next week, just because. Unless something really shocking happens in the next few days, I don't think this debate will make a difference. I think Trump dropping out of the debate, if anything, will help Trump.
Do you think Trump will shoot somebody before the election, before the primary?
Only if they piss him off.
Okay.
Now, I kept saying it would be really interesting. Like, Trump's little event was right across the street. If he really wanted to dominate the news cycle, about halfway through, he would have gotten in his limo, come over, and just said, did you miss me?
Just marched in.
Just marched in and say, did you miss me? And answer a couple questions, and then, like, be out of there. You know, but do it right in the middle, and we would not have been talking about anything else from now until Iowa if he'd crashed the party after saying he wasn't coming. In the middle, not from the beginning, but in the middle.
It's funny.
And I'm actually somewhat surprised he didn't do that, because that seemed like the obvious Trump kind of, well, dick move would be to do something like that. And it would seem like it was perfectly in character, but he did not do that. It did not happen. But I think if anything, this whole thing about the debate will help him. At worst, it won't do a damn thing. And so I think he does, you know, come out of Iowa with a slight lead on delegates. I think we've got a pretty solid 1-2-3 right now. It's going to be Trump, Cruz, Rubio.
That's what it looks like right now.
And I know everything we said at the beginning about how volatile Iowa is and 30% of people ready to change their minds and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to say it stays in this order. You know, and who knows? We could be talking next week about the sudden Rubio upset, or we could be talking about how Cruz wins narrowly, or even, I don't know, maybe more than narrowly. But you know, and that would be more interesting, obviously, than a Trump win. Cruz needs to win here in order to really keep pushing this forward.
I agree. I think really he needs a win, and it's possible. Okay, you know.
Oh yeah, he's within shooting range.
He's within, yeah. So you know, that's
Cruz
good
could
too.
Win. I mean, I'm predicting Trump's going to win, but like, you
but
know,
Cruz could. You wouldn't be shocked. If
I would not
Cruz
be shocked
won.
If Cruz won. I'd be pretty damn surprised if Rubio won. But Cruz, oh no, I'd be like, okay, I was wrong about Trump, but this was well within the realm of easy possibility.
Right.
So. Hey,
and by the way,
6.8% is a little bit of a stretch, but like we said, it's happened. It's not out of the question.
I am tweeting out right now. This is available. It's in the New York Times, but it's not behind a paywall.
Right.
There was a blog post over here on the Upshot blog about Donald Trump's Twitter insults, the complete list so far. Okay. In the 7 months since declaring his candidacy for president, Donald Trump has used Twitter to lob insults at presidential candidates, journalists, news organizations, nations, a Neil Young song, and even a lectern in the Oval Office. We know this because we've read, tagged, and quoted them all. Below is a directory of sorts with links to the original tweets. Insults within the last 2 weeks are highlighted in green. Okay, so there you go.
First of all, I say just scanning through this, one thing that comes out right away is that Jeb Bush has by far more insults than anybody else on this list.
Yes! Oh, my God, he's really hammered him.
Low energy guy at the bottom of the barrel. Low energy. He should go home and relax. Sad sack. Chances of winning are zero. Did poorly last night. Weak and ineffective. Campaign is a disaster. Low energy stiff. Has no chance. Sad case. Total embarrassment. Took millions of dollars to hit ads. Failed candidate. Ridiculous. So sad. Poor. Really pathetic. Phony. Weak. Low energy. Etc. 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 It goes on and on. Just from the ones they highlighted from the last 2 weeks, Jeb Bush will do anything to stay at the trough. Ted Cruz dropping like a rock, a nervous wreck, not caring for the truth, reckless. People do not like Ted, a nervous wreck, failing in the polls, will do anything to stay at the trough. Glenn Beck crying, dumb as a rock, failing, lost all credibility.
Man. Frank Bruni, dope.
Yes. Megyn Kelly, lightweight reporter. I refuse to call Megyn Kelly a bimbo because that would not be politically correct.
Oh, God.
Lightweight reporter again. And by the way, there was another article with all of the insults that Trump's followers have posted about Megyn Kelly.
Oh, my God.
Which is pretty...
Oh, God. Yeah,
exactly. Let's see, what else? Carl Rove is a loser. Bob Vanderplatz is a bad guy and phony. I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is either. Fox News, the statement put out yesterday at Fox News is a disgrace to good broadcasting and journalism. Pathetic. Without me, they'd have no ratings. Childishly written and taunting PR statement.
There you go. I mean, you get the idea.
Yeah.
But, like, this whole segment is a case in point of the fact that, you know, a debate happened tonight. Trump wasn't in it. Who have we been talking about for most of the last 40 minutes? Donald Trump! And this is how he dominates. Because he does these things that... nobody cannot pay attention to.
Who gives a fuck about the issues or the things or whatever? Now, I didn't watch the debate, so I can't even talk about what they talked about. I did listen to a little bit in the car, and I tuned away from it because all I could hear is Cruz going on and on again about how he's never been for amnesty. I will never legalize anybody, blah, 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 blah. I was just like, oh, fuck this. Let me listen to something else.
Okay, so I gave my 1-2-3 prediction, Trump, Cruz, Rubio. Do you agree?
I would say that's most likely outcome at this point.
Okay. And let's see. And I said, Okay. I'll come back with, I was going to do the math and do actual delegate predictions based on their current percentages, but I'm not going to bother with that. My prediction is roughly that, you know, the results are going to be relatively close to the polls, which just means that, nobody gets a majority in delegates, but Trump gets the most by a small amount.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk Democrats, including... the debut of my delegate tracker, which started out by an analysis of where the delegates are already, even though no votes have happened. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready. Frankenstein, then. let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back talking about Democrats, and we'll try to make this fast because it's getting really late for Yvonne there.
Clinton's going to win. Any other questions?
Well, Clinton's going to win in the end.
In the end, right.
But let's just talk Iowa for right now.
She may not win Iowa. It doesn't make a fucking difference. Who cares?
I agree. And we talked about this extensively last week. Like, she could win both Iowa. She could lose both Iowa and New Hampshire and still win, because what would happen is we'd have a major freakout for a few weeks, and then she'd absolutely crush it in South Carolina.
Yep.
And the next state, and the next state, and the next state.
And that's it. And it's all over.
Now,
yes.
Now, the spin on that is, of course, if she looks so weak in Iowa and New Hampshire after winning both, do the people in South Carolina suddenly change their minds?
No.
I think you're right.
It's like a ridiculous conversation. That fucking doesn't matter. Don't make a fucking difference.
So let me do the same thing I did with the Republicans and just talk a little bit about delegates in Iowa too. So the way it works for the Democrats is actually very different than the way it works for the Republicans. The Republicans tightened things up because of the fact that last year, in 2012, they had this whole thing where, you know, they thought Romney won, then they thought Santorum won, and Santorum did win the popular vote, but Ron Paul ran away with the delegates because of the way the delegate selection process worked. And so they tightened all that up and introduced the system that I just outlined, where it's really based straight out proportional based on the vote. The Democrats have not made that change. The Democrats still have this multi-stage process. So one thing on the Democratic side, no actual delegates will be determined next Monday. None. What would happen is that on Monday, the precincts will elect delegates to their county caucuses. Then later on, in March, the county caucuses meet to elect delegates to the state and district conventions, where the district conventions meet in April and the state conventions meet in June. And it's not until those conventions in April and June that any actual delegates are determined on the Democratic side.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And at each one of those stages...
So, you know, you could say it, you know, Iowa doesn't fucking matter for the Democrats.
Well, except that you're still going to hear about it. You're still going to hear numbers, and people are still going to declare a winner. And you can do some estimates based on the results we're going to get. I saw one thing, and I don't know if this is really true, that at the precinct level, they're actually not going to report popular vote at all, only the delegate results at the precinct level. Because when you are electing these candidates for delegates to the next stage of the process, they are people that are declaring their preference. So you'll vote for somebody who has said that they support Clinton, or vote for somebody who has said they support Sanders. Now, that they're not bound by that at all. They can change their mind before they get to the next stage, but they're telling you who they support.
Right.
And so we're going to have numbers for at each precinct how many Sanders people, how many Clinton people have been elected. And you can use that to estimate how it will end up by the time it gets to the final number of Alex is saying something again.
Blah, blah.
Anyway, you can use it to estimate the final convention delegates, but they will be estimates that will change over time, and you don't expect them to remain exactly the same. But we'll know. We will have a rough idea. We'll be able to guess. There are 44 delegates at stake. And in the Iowa caucuses on Monday for the Democratic side, and we'll be able to roughly guess what they're going to be. But it is not a straight proportional thing. It's by some of them are. So what is it? It's 29 of those 44 delegates are based on winners and based on the vote in each of the different congressional districts. 15 of them are based on the vote statewide. Yes. Can you hear me?
No. Yeah. I said no. Oh. So 15 are okay. I didn't but realize not, that many not, were on the statewide.
But it's
vote.
Not winner take all.
No, I get that.
So
okay.
it's 15 are based on the statewide vote, but those 15 are still distributed based on
proportionally.
Based on which people are winning, and yeah. So roughly proportionally, but not exactly proportionally. And the districts are also that way, but it's sort of proportional by district, and there are only a few per district, so there's only so much granularity you can have. And basically, most of these rules are constructed in such a way that they favor whoever has the most popular support. So you'll get sort of, let's say you have a 52% lead overall. Your percentage lead in delegates might actually be 60%.
Gotcha.
Because there's sort of a bonus for being the winner.
Right.
But we'll see what those estimates are. And where that comes into play, again, I'm going to mention electiongraphs.com. This last week, I launched my delegate tracker for both Republicans and Democrats, but there's no Republican data yet. However, on the Democratic side, there are these nice little things called superdelegates. And Republicans do have an equivalent to superdelegates, but it's more limited, and they're, for the most part, people who officially aren't actually selected until the state conventions later on down the process. Although some of them you could guess, like if it is an incumbent, then it's likely to win again. You could guess that they'll probably be a delegate, but officially they're not there yet. But on the Democratic side, it's all the governors, all the senators, all the members of the House, the members of the DNC, and then they've got another category for what they call distinguished party leaders, which is basically like people who used to be governors and presidents and things like that, who aren't anymore but still have this role.
Doesn't that include me? I'm not there.
I'm not
on the list.
I'm sorry, you're not.
Fuck.
But anyway, there are 713 superdelegates, which ends up being about 15% of the delegates to the Democratic convention are superdelegates. Of those, by my best estimate, using a whole bunch of different sources, 389 have already expressed a preference. And of those 389, 375 support Clinton.
That's pretty good.
So if you do the math, that's 96.4% of all of the superdelegates who have already expressed a preference are for Clinton. By comparison, Sanders has 11 delegates, which is 2.8%, and O'Malley has 3, which is 0.8%, rounding a little bit there. So Clinton has been absolutely dominant in the superdelegates. And what that means is right now, 8%, a little over 8%, of the delegates to the convention are already known, are already out there, and have already said who they're going to support. And almost all of those are for Clinton. Now, that means she's got a huge head start. And what I do on electiongraphs.com and in the analysis post I did, which, by the way, the first analysis post I did was titled Clinton's Big Head Start. I posted it on January 27th, and read it for all the details. It steps you through this. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, in order to actually be on a pace to catch up with Clinton, Sanders doesn't need 50% of the delegates. He needs a little bit more than 54% of the delegates. Whereas to be on a pace to win, Clinton only needs 45.9%, so a little less than less than 46%, and she's still on a pace to win. So theoretically, you could have results coming out of this where Sanders wins the most delegates, but not by a big enough margin, so he's actually catching up. And so the number to watch, what I've said is when you start looking at these delegate estimates for Iowa, and of course they are estimates, as we just talked about, what you want to look at is, does he reach 54%? Not just did he win, but does he reach 54%? And with 44 delegates at stake, that means he needs 24 of those delegates in order to be on a pace to catch up with Clinton. Now, if he actually gets that 24, like we said before, he may be on a pace to catch up, but he may be doing so in a way that he can do that in Iowa and New Hampshire, but he just can't replicate that anywhere else. So, you know, she may, you know, we'll get the few weeks of tension here and then something else will happen entirely. But if he wins but doesn't even get 24, he's not actually on pace to catch up. Now, then the reason that's still somewhat legitimate to talk about, because like we said, if he does really well in Iowa and he does really well in New Hampshire, maybe that improves his shot at other states further down the line. But the real number to watch is what I call the percent of remaining delegates needed to win. I've got a whole bunch of graphs and charts on electiongraphs.com, but for the delegate race, that's the one that I say everybody should pay the most attention to, because it basically says, you know, it not just who's ahead right now, but what do you need to do in order to actually win based on what's left? And what happens there is, so for instance, if Bernie Sanders doesn't get 54% of the delegates, he only gets 51. Okay, fine, he won Iowa. But what that means is when you get to New Hampshire, instead of needing 54%, he'll need 55% or something.
Yep.
And then if he doesn't make 55, the next time around, he'll need 56 or 57.
Right.
And it'll get harder and harder.
He's not going to win!
Right. So, you know, and 8% is a big head start. Now, you know, compared to 2012, by the way, you know, Clinton is way ahead of where she was in 2012, because people like to do the Obama comparison.
Yeah.
She's got about twice as many superdelegates as she had right before Iowa in 2008, not 2012. Yeah. She was ahead in superdelegates, and Obama caught up and passed her by around Super Tuesday in early March or late February, early March, whatever it was. But Sanders' job is harder than Obama's was in 2008.
Way harder, which is why I keep saying
it ain't gonna happen.
Right.
And you know, with the usual caveats, like, Clinton could blow it.
Sure. Clinton could go out and try to do like Trump and try to shoot somebody on the street. But
I suspect
that she will lose a lot of support if she does.
Yeah, I don't think
because apparently she's now being, you know, most people that, you know, that are supporting her are not apparently.
Yes. 70% of Trump folks would continue to support him if he started shooting people. I don't think Clinton's numbers would be that high.
No, she doesn't have that strong a support. No. Apparently.
But anyway, I'm excited. Check out electiongraphs.com, both the general election stuff and the delegate trackers. It's going to be fun. I'm eager to start getting actual real election numbers on this stuff. You know, so, but yeah, I think Sanders might get that 24 delegate margin I was talking about in Iowa. It's sort of at the upper end of his possibility range, I think, in Iowa, but he could do it. He could do it. He could get, 24. He could get that 54%, 24 delegates, whatever it was. He could beat that margin in Iowa. He will, I think, very likely beat that in New Hampshire when we start talking about New Hampshire. But New Hampshire's maybe. He's right on the edge of the percentage he would need, and you got those esoteric things happening. But it is possible that he will beat that margin in both Iowa and New Hampshire. But I think that he would still have a struggle beyond that. But we'll see. We'll see. It's coming. It's coming.
All right.
Anything else to say about Democrats?
No, and I'm going to beg that we, given the time, that we don't do a lightning round
okay.
today. I know.
We could do that.
I'm
but
sorry.
In that case, I will end with one piece of feedback that we got.
Yes. Okay. All right.
So we did have a piece of feedback from our loyal listener, Matt, who said, regarding last week's show, oh my God, your reading of Palin's remarks remind me of when you used to read poetry from your friend every week. You're such the slam poet. So, you know, and I guess Palin's remarks could be interpreted as, you know,
they did poetry. Sound like, well, yeah, they did come off like that. I mean, the way that you read it, it did.
It's got a certain rhythm to it.
Yes, there is. Well, you did. Well, I will give you credit for adding that rhythm to it.
And that wasn't in the original?
I don't think so. Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, she just sounded like some angry elf, like rambling. I mean, so yeah, you gave it like some artistic like interpretation, you know.
Well, there you go. Okay, well, we will go ahead and wrap it up then. No lightning round this time, so yeah, we'll miss out.
I promise one next week. I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know. Really, next week we'll have the Iowa results, so who knows?
Well, I probably won't start this late. I'm just a little bit. I'm running out of steam here. Okay, so.
Yeah. And you know, there are a few other random things, but, you know, whatever. Next time. We can never talk about everything.
Yeah, we never can.
So, thanks everybody for joining us on Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, like us on Facebook. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook, and go like me at Election Graphs as well. Leave comments on both of those sites. We'd love to hear about the episodes on Curmudgeon's Corner. And hey, on Election Graphs, if you have any commentary or thoughts that aren't just
Trump!
that aren't just Trump! Or that aren't just advocacy for or against any candidates, but that actually respond to the numbers and the analysis I put out. I would love that. Even if you're saying, Sam, your numbers are full of shit, at least if you're actually responding to the substance, that's cool. but yeah, like, or, you know, hey, if you really want to talk about, you know, go yell Sanders. Okay. Go ahead. Go yell Sanders. That's fine too. Anyway, like us both on Facebook, both of those sites, Election Graphs and Curmudgeon's Corner. Follow us on Facebook. I'm at Abelsmay, and Yvonne is at I Am Bo. I keep meaning to set up a Twitter account for, did I say Facebook? Both of those are Twitter, obviously.
Twitter. Oh, you said Twitter.
I did say Twitter. I'm getting so confused.
I thought you said Twitter.
I'm getting so confused. Anyway, at some point I'll set up a Twitter for Curmudgeon's Corner itself, but I just haven't done it yet. We love to engage. Engage us in all those platforms and tell your friends to listen too. And that's it. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next time. And next time we talk, we will know what happened in Iowa.
Trump!
And with that, good night and goodbye.